Who do we have in line now?
This is Nachona in New Mexico.
Hey, I was just actually going to... I see you on the website, too. How you doing?
Baruch Hashem, how are you doing, Rabbi?
Good, Baruch Hashem.
The time change didn't mess you up too much?
Nah. Very simple. Very simple. So we just the protocol is just wait for everybody else to get on the phone. And then we'll start.
Okay.
Morning, Rabbi.
Good morning, Carolyn. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Okay. And we have a new participant now. Nachshon is online with us. He's very interested in joining us on the classes, so he's going to join on the phone. So that's Carolyn Nachshon. And there's also Rivka and Daryl, and I think Cal and Doug and Josh. And Jim will be joining us.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Good morning. Cal's here, but Doug's traveling today.
Okay, how you doing, Cal?
Good.
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 Have you spoken to Josh lately? He hasn't been able to join us for quite a while. I guess he's busy in Phoenix.
I haven't spoke with him or had any email contacts. I'm not sure.
Okay. Jim, are you out online yet?
Yes, Rabbi. I'm sorry.
Okay, good. Okay, so I think we got everybody. Okay, so I have to apologize, first of all, that I didn't have a chance to look over. I got caught up this morning, something came up when I had, sometimes you have a good block of time and you're all set to start reviewing the material and then something comes up, so unfortunately. But we can do is still flush out a bit. The discussion I had with Doug on here was 2 weeks ago regarding the concept of a person abandons learning for 1 day, so it abandons him for 2 days. So we talked about it a bit and I sent out a text. No, that's an email, I mean. Just to clarify and to give the source on it. Did everybody get that, first of all? Okay. Nachshon, will you...
I was going to ask Rabbi, how can I get on that list so I can be part of that?
Oh, just send a blank email to Noah Hides, Noah Hides, then a dash, and then the word on, O-N, at misora.org. And that'll subscribe you. So this way you'll get any emails that go out to the group.
Okay.
But we were discussing, because I'm not sure how it came up in the conversation, but we came to the point where we had, Doug and I had different opinions. Ended up both of them were borne out in a specific... actually the last page of the Jerusalem Talmud. And we were talking about the concept of if a person abandons learning, so then it's going to abandon him. It's not a penalty, it's just practically that's how a human being works. That's part of the dynamics of a person's attachment to something, his value of something, his relationship, really. But there's a different type of relationship, so I was discussing that the fact is it's going to happen to anybody. And it would seem to be a loss that a person is suffering, even though he may be coerced. I mean, sometimes, everybody experiences in life where you know, things come up and they have to travel, they have to be away, and they just don't have the ability. They have to provide, you know, you don't eat, you don't live. So you have to provide for yourself, certainly if you have a family. So, but that doesn't mean that even though you're fulfilling your responsibility and you're doing what's right in one part of your life, that doesn't mean that there's going to be, that there won't be, that you'll be insulated from consequence. And it's also not something which you should look at as, you know, irreparable. It's not a harm which is a permanent damage. And I think that might be, you know, one of the concerns as we're discussing it. But, you know, the Talmud does say unequivocally that if a if a person is away from learning for one day, so then if you abandon it for one day, so then it abandons you for 2 days. So, evidently, though, the Talmud then goes and gives two metaphors. Evidently, because there are two different types of abandonment of learning. And it bears out that Doug's idea is true, that if it's really just more, it's not the person's own doing that he leaves learning. I mean, he has the ability to do it, but he's not doing it, he's not interested. So that case, there will be a different type of a result, a different type of a relationship in his learning than if a person is very attached to it, but he just has to attend to obligations. So the two cases, do you remember the cases that we gave? Talking to everybody.
Okay. Good.
Wasn't it about the two people that were journeying?
Right.
Is that what, yeah, from Tiberias and so forth?
Exactly. Good memory. Right. The first case that the Talmud gave was it's a very brief piece of Talmud. It just says that if you abandon me for one day, I'll abandon you for 2 days, and then it goes on. And it says there were two men that traveled from two different cities, one from Tiberias, one from Sepphoris. So they're distant from each other. They met at an inn, and then they continued on their way. And in the time it took for them to travel 1 mile, they ended up that the two men were 2 miles apart. Because if you're traveling in opposite directions, and you're starting at the same point, so in 1 mile's time, the two men who are traveling are going to be 2 miles apart. Very simple math. Then it gives another case where there's a woman who's waiting for a man, and as long as he has her in his thoughts, so she will wait for him. But as soon as she hears that he's no longer thinking of her, so then she abandons him and goes to another. So, you know, the details that are given by the rabbis in these metaphors are very important. And oftentimes they're not studied, they're glossed over, and then, you know, there's a practice where people are reading the Talmud, and they try to cover the entire Talmud in 7 years. So they really have to zip through it, and they're missing all of these gems. And as the Talmud says, you know, it says two things. It doesn't matter whether you learned a lot or a little, provided that your learning was a good intent. And the second thing the Talmud says is that the purpose of learning is to understand the deep concepts. So to try to amass ground and to sacrifice the deep concepts is really not the purpose of the Talmud. So if a person, and the truth is that a person's enjoyment and appreciation for wisdom is only going to occur when he spends, you know, she spends the time in studying, you know, whatever laws apply to them. And but trying to, you know, to carry that appreciation that, first of all, the Torah originates with God, so it's going to have tremendous amount of depth. And the rabbis too are tremendously wise, and when they write something, we have to not just rush through it. So the question we had in the first case was, if you're trying to tell me that there's a distant relationship, I mean, if the two men were at the inn, they really don't, and they leave. So that's analogous to the fact that you're leaving learning. So one man is the person, the other man represents Torah. So if they leave, so the man leaves and he goes to the right, well, the Torah is going to leave and go to the left, creating the 2 days gap as opposed to just a 1 day gap. Even though the man who traveled away was only traveling for 1 day, so in essence, he only abandoned his learning for 1 day, but you see that the Talmud is saying, well, the Torah leaves in the other direction. So what's the concept there? And furthermore, that is all we really need, is that from the point of when they met at the inn and then they departed each other. The question we raise is, why do you need to have the first part of that metaphor where it says they were both in two different cities, once Tiberias, once Sepphoris? What do I need that for? Okay, so those are the two questions. So I'm not sure if there's a repetition we're doing here, but you know, it's let's see if we can just elaborate or review the concept. So do we discuss those two questions or no? Okay, I feel better then. I usually don't like to do repetition. You know, it's actually something I saw interesting. Another statement of the rabbis that let me just recall where it was. It was talking about loss, and they said the greatest loss is a person not progressing in his learning. So if he's going over material that he's studied already, so and he's reviewing it, so there is a Talmud that says that, you know, a person plants and he doesn't reap. So that's the same thing as a person who learns and doesn't review. So review is necessary. But once you have reviewed and you know the material cold, to go over it again is taking time away from new material. So, you know, it is true that we're not looking to zip through, but we do want to progress in learning. We don't want to be stagnant. We want to cover areas and, you know, just have a fuller appreciation or to see more of God's wisdom. So that's why I'm saying it's repetition is not preferable to, you know, breaking the ground. So let's take the question then. So the question is, why do we need the first part of the story that tells us that the two men were in different places? How does that relate to the concept?
I would think that the two different places must represent something. I don't know much about those two places, but there must be some differences between them.
Well, I don't think it's necessary the names or which they are, but what's necessary is that there were two different places that these men started at. You have to speak up. I can barely hear you, Jim.
Does it make their meeting incidental? I apologize.
Make the meeting incidental?
Yes.
Yes.
Seeking each other out.
I mean, they're not seeking each other out. It was just accidental meeting.
Yes.
Okay, good. So it's telling you that they really didn't know each other. That's what it means. They started in two different cities. So therefore, we have to carry in our minds what the metaphor is all along. So the two men really represent a person and Torah. So if a person and Torah are at distant locations, so what does that tell you about the relationship that the person has to his Torah? Exactly. Right. I mean, it's just maybe a happenstance or incidental, as Jim said. There are distant places to begin with. That means that there's no relationship to begin with. Now, let's take it further now. So the next part of the metaphor is that they meet at an inn, and then they part, and then one day's journey, they end up to be 2 days' journeys apart. Now, how do we translate that? So what's the meeting at an inn? What is that?
Does this mean that he has learned some Torah at some point? I mean, at this point, he's learned some Torah. He comes in contact with anything.
Right, meaning there was some point where the person and a relationship to wisdom took place, but it was a brief encounter, and it was not sustained, right? And then what happens?
Well, then he moves on from with them. He does not travel with them.
Right, so after that, that encounter is terminated, so then there is a departure, and it's something that we're saying that when he leaves and he only travels one day journey, or 1 mile, he ends up to be 2 miles away from it. Meaning that because of that type of relationship, so if he wanted to get back together with this other person that, that left, it would take twice as much toil. Because now that other person is 2 miles away from him. Now, if the other person just stays where he is, the first person is going to have to walk 2 miles to get there, even though his act was only a one-day journey since he met him last. So it's taking the other person and saying that, well, if your relationship is such that it's incidental, and you just happen to, brief encounter with wisdom, so then there's really no attachment to it. And there's a psychological truth, and that is that when a person does not have an interest in something, so to get back involved, and certainly wisdom, so the patterns of thinking of the person's mind, they've been reengaged in his journey and his livelihood. So now the way the mind works is that it's sort of like when you train yourself to do something, you can get very emotionally involved in it and then less emotionally involved in something else. So the person is going right back into his work, and now to get back into the learning, his mind and the patterns and his emotional attachments have been broken. So to get his energies and his patterns of thinking back into a pursuit of wisdom is going to be twice as hard. Because a person is God designs a person in the way where he gets used to the pattern that he's following. Yes? Is there any question?
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't there an implication, supposing you want to go ahead and rectify the relationship, so you start heading towards the Torah, right? And you try to make up that distance, but the Torah continues to go to the left. Isn't there an implication that basically you might have lost that opportunity of what you could have learned? So you're trying to make that up, but potentially you might not be able to.
No, you can't. I mean, you can't make up lost time, but you can reestablish the relationship. Because if you're going after it, it's not running away from you at that point. It only runs away from you when you're running away from it. But when you're trying to get back into it, then, so to speak, it's stationary, waiting for you to arrive at it. So it's not, if the Talmud went on and it would continue, it would say as follows. It would say, now once the person got 1 day's journey away from it, it was 2 days' journey away from the other person. Now if, I would continue writing the Talmud, I would say, but if the person turned around to chase after the other person, he'd be able to catch up to him in 2 days. But then he could establish a relationship that's intimate, and then he would go on to the next piece of the Talmud. But leaving him, unless he's doing the act of leaving too. So that's very important in the Talmud, and we didn't bring it up last time, so it's good that you're bringing this up, Nachshon. And that is that the only time that Torah is abandoning the person is when he is in the mode of abandonment, when he is removing his energies and investing himself into other matters. So that's when Torah is leaving him, meaning to say that the processes of the mind and the emotional attachments are being broken, both parts of the human being. That's why it says that in the Shema, it says you're supposed to worship God with all your heart. So Rashi says over there, what do you mean all your heart? It should just say worship God with your heart. He says no, all your heart means with both of your inclinations, your instincts and your intellect, because both are necessary. God didn't create the instincts to hurt man, he created them to help man. And you need it, and you see that when a person is involved in something, that he gets emotionally involved in it. So that's what it means, with both of your instincts, that your energies, both your emotions and your intellect, should be involved. And that's really when the whole person is the happiest, because happiness is defined as when all the person's energies are being satisfied. That's what happiness is. Happiness is when a person has energy, and he's in a person has tremendous energy, as Rabbi Chaya explains. And it's always seeking satisfaction. That's the beginning of Koheles, as Rabbi Chaya taught, that the energies are like a parable of a river flowing, and it's seeking to go further after it gets to one spot. Because it's the libido, the energy, and a person is constant. It's for his whole life. And a person is only unhappy when his what he's seeking out, he gets frustrated and he can't get satisfaction. Like a person who wants to go play tennis and then it starts raining. A person goes on vacation and he lost his luggage and his airport. He's going to wait there for 3 hours to get it and he can't get on with his journey. So his energy is where he wants to go to sightsee, and that's why he came to this new destination. He can't do that right now because he has to wait for his luggage. So that's a frustration. The energies can't be satisfied. And to use the metaphor of learning, so when the person's involved in learning and he sees new insights, so there's no end. That's why learning is the most enjoyable activity, because there's no possibility of frustration. Rabbi Chaya once had a good remark. He said that even when a person makes a mistake in learning, that too is learning. He just learned that he made an error. He learned that his previous concept was wrong, but that's an act of learning too. So there really is no downside to learning. And since it's an endless study, the person can keep on going for hours. And people do this. They can spend the entire day in the study hall. And they're investigating this and that, and this leads to another area, and he investigates that. And the only time he leaves is because he's hungry or he's physically tired. He has to go to sleep until the next day. But since there's no frustration, that's why it's the most enjoyable activity. But it's also illuminating the central part of a person, which is the intellect, the soul. And since that's the center of a person, not as emotions, not as physical, the physical a person knows, is not the center of himself. The real essence of a person is where he is different from all other creations. That's his intelligence. So when a person satisfies that, there's that element too in terms of satisfaction, that he sees this is really the good. So that accompanies the pursuit of the knowledge, the beautiful insights that he sees, but it also, he knows that it's striking a chord, that this is really his purpose. And this is really the height of a human's experiences and what he can be in his activities. Okay. So that's in terms of the first metaphor that he gives. But that's where, like Jim said, that starting out at two different locations, and Carolyn added that there is no relationship. So if a person has no relationship with wisdom, so as soon as he leaves it, so then all of his patterns of thinking and activity and emotions are going to go into some other area, and it'll be that much more difficult to rechannel his energies, to pull it out of his other pursuits, whether it's money, fame, whatever it is, and get back into the learning. That's why it says this, it'll take twice as long to get back into it, even though you're only away from it for half as long. But that's only if you have no relationship to learning. That's where the second part of the Talmud comes in. It says the analogy of a woman who waits for a man as long as he keeps her in mind. So what does that mean? And she'll wait for him as long as she knows that he's thinking of her. But as soon as she gets wind that he's not thinking about her anymore, so she leaves and goes and betroths somebody else. Okay, so what is that? What's that metaphor about?
This person does have a relationship with Torah.
Good. So the man he's got a relationship, and what's the illustration given here? Why this illustration?
Well, for some reason he is unable to study for a particular period, but that doesn't mean that wisdom has left him. He still has wisdom on his mind, and so he's not divorced from that situation. I mean, wisdom is still there and as a goal in his head. He hasn't abandoned learning, he just doesn't have the opportunity. And so abandoned him.
Right, so and the metaphor is a very good metaphor. Because it's a metaphor of romance. And you see that King Solomon in his book Song of Songs. So he talks about his relationship with God like an illustration of a man and a woman. I mean, he tries to use the most powerful emotion that people, you know, that a lay person understands, and he speaks to them in their language. So he talks about his attachment to wisdom in that way. He was just completely overcome by it. It was just an amazing thing. And King David talks about wisdom like it's a plaything to him, like a pure joy, like a child with a new toy. But here in the Talmud, in the Jerusalem Talmud, this is the end, the last page of Brachot. Yeah, what was that? Okay, I thought somebody had a question. So there it says that as long as she is on his mind, so she awaits him. So who is the she in this case?
Does it represent wisdom?
Exactly. So he's...
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead, Nachshon.
No, that's all I was going to say, Rabbi.
Okay. Right, so here there's a different relationship. Meaning here there is a relationship. The previous case there was no relationship. The two men started out at two different locations. That means man and his wisdom are completely apart from each other. But that's the first case of the Talmud. Because the Talmud understood that there are two relationships to wisdom. There's a case where there is a relationship and a case where there is not. And a case where there is, now, even though he is away from her, because now you have to make a deduction, as long as she is on his mind. Now, when is a woman on a man's mind? So that's when she is not in his presence. Then he thinks about her. That's the next best thing. So you have to deduce from here that they're not together. But despite that, as long as she is on his mind, that means to say that she's waiting. That means the wisdom is waiting for him just to finish up whatever involvement he is in. He has to be away for a few days, but since he's a person that values wisdom, it's right in his mind the whole time. He carries it with him at all times. And as soon as he has a moment, he reflects and he ponders on ideas that he was learning and thinking about. And he can ease right into it. That's what it means that she waits for him. That she'll always be ready to be encountered by him. So that's wisdom too. So this tells you that if a person has that attachment to wisdom, so that it doesn't matter that he's mechanically addressing the needs that he has to do in life, that he has to fulfill. There's no break in the relationship. Because the human psyche works in a way, and the emotions work in a way different than the first case. Here, even though practically he was not involved, but as long as his thoughts were preoccupied, and she was in the back of his mind, so then the relationship was never broken. So it's telling you that God created a human being in the way that, although from time to time we do have to take breaks to address our needs, but since the value is not something that we ever turned our backs on, so God designed us in a way where we will maintain that same intensity of the relationship with wisdom. And we will not have to go through a two-day process to get back into it. It'll be immediate. That's what it means that she waits for him. She's waiting for him. As soon as he's ready, she's there. That's what that part of that analogy means.
So Rabbi, can I ask a question?
Yes.
So does this tie in with the thought that basically, like you were saying, you know, life sometimes throws things at you and you can be working late one night. But it's understood in terms of, you know, setting times out for Torah study during the day or during that time. So is that why basically you can fulfill your commitment to studying Torah by saying Kriyat Shema at night and maybe not staying up late because you know that also you have the mitzvah in the morning to say chakras, but you still have in mind that when, like you were saying, when time opens up, that's what's on your mind, that you're going to get back to your Torah studies. It's not that you've abandoned it, but it's just that, you know, life does throw things at you.
That's true. So there's two things you're saying. One thing is that you're agreeing that you'll get back right back into it. And another thing you're saying is that you're still satisfying the Torah obligation to learn by reciting the Kriya Shema, which is true. You also do it in the morning when you say a certain number of verses in the prayers. You Yivarechcha, when we say those, right after the blessing on Torah study, we say that every morning. So immediately we follow that with a few verses of learning. So we do satisfy it right away. So, because a person, if he makes a prayer on Torah study, so he's going to, you know, he has to be engaged in it. You know, you make a prayer on something, you have to follow through with the action. You make a prayer on eating, you have to do the eating immediately afterwards. It's the same thing with a mitzvah, which, you know, Torah study is. It's the greatest mitzvah, the Talmud says. Now, what about the next part? But as soon as she hears that he is not thinking about her anymore, so then she leaves him and espouses another. You don't have her on your mind anymore, so then she is going to betroth another. Let's think.
So then somebody else who's actively engaged in seeking wisdom is going to acquire her. So the wisdom is available to anybody who wants to acquire her. And somebody who wants to basically dilly-dally or... not on his mind or her mind, then they're going to lose it, and the wisdom will follow somebody else, or somebody else will acquire it.
Right, so how is this, what no point is this giving us that we didn't have from the previous analogy? Previous analogy was this, as they left the inn, the guy went this way, the other guy went that way, so there's going to be a break. So what element is being elucidated over here that we don't know already? And that's a rule, that the Talmud is not going to be, you know, the Torah is not redundant. Makes sense to me that practically that can happen. I would just say the opposite. In this case, there was a relationship, an intimate relationship. So why should it be something which is subject to greater loss than the previous case? Everybody sees the question? Okay, and therefore, what would it be any different than the first case?
Well, because he stopped thinking about it and wasn't interested anymore.
Okay, but the guy who left the inn also wasn't interested either. So what's the new concept that this case is giving us? Yes.
Does it have anything to do with filling a void?
I don't know what you mean.
Well, like when you, how does it fit with the Torah? I mean, in the case of the woman, when she finds out that he's not thinking of her, there's a void there. And so she replaces it with someone else. And I'm just trying to think, how does that work with Torah? But to me, somehow this void thing seems to stand out in that situation.
Well, you can't say the Torah has a void. And it's God's,
right.
It's God's wisdom, so it's perfect entity. So we have to say that it's basically, we only carry the metaphor so far. So we're not going to infuse into the Torah the emotional aspect of a void. I lost this guy, so, now I'm lost, I got to find somebody else. What we'll do is we'll only go so far where it's, it's sensible, and we'll say that it now leaves the person. So finding somebody else means it's leaving the person. But then that brings us back to the question, so what new point are we being taught?
Well, it seems like it takes more of a discipline to get back into Torah, and that if you're engaged in worldly kinds of things, that's more of a draw. It's easier to get pulled into the physical draws.
I don't see that from necessarily from this case, because what it's saying is that she'll wait for him as long as he's thinking of her, and once she knows that he's not thinking of her anymore, then she leaves him.
Is the difference the relationship? Does the analogy between a man and a woman, basically, it's kind of like analogous to marriage. There's a more intimate relationship here.
That's true. So how can they help us explain this? See, I think the point that it's saying is that even in this case where there was a relationship, as opposed to the previous case where there was no relationship between the two men, even in the case where you had an intimate relationship, that is no security that it will be sustained on its own. There's no such thing as Torah staying with you on its own steam. It's only when that effort and the devotion from the person is there. Meaning this is addressing a thought that a person might have that, when there's no relationship. So then I could see that, if you have a brief encounter, so then once you're done, the relationship is not going to be there. Nothing is sustaining because you had no relationship to begin with. They just briefly met at the inn. They went their different ways. Now there's no relationship. It'll take 2 days to get back into it. But maybe in a case where there's a relationship like a man has with a woman. So now, once that exists, sometime in life, I might think that it now goes on its own steam and it's always there available for me. I have to do nothing to maintain it. So that's what I believe is the second point over here, that it's telling you no. Do not think that. Meaning to say that a relationship to wisdom is not different because you were intensely involved at one point. That is not going to now change you for the rest of your life. It's something which is a constant need. It's just like, a person eats a meal, a very big meal, don't think, now I have to eat for the rest of my life. No, it's no different. You ate a lot today or you ate a little today. The body is constantly requiring that nourishment. And you can use that as an analogy to how the relationship to wisdom is. A person might think that since there was such an intense relationship now, I could rest on my laurels, so to speak. Or it's something which I can now, rely on my days when I was a student. I learned for 10, 20 years. Now, I don't have to do it so more. It's with me. I've got all that in the bank. Nope, that's not the case. You may have learned. You may have the memory of that. You may recall what you studied. But in terms of the value here that the Talmud is talking about, and this is a new point, it's not how much you've learned and what you have in the bank, so to speak. It's your relationship. That is what this Talmud is talking about. It's talking about what is your relationship, your value system right now. And that's really what the most important thing is. What is your value? Because that's really the merit of a person. What is his attitude? What does he look at in terms of being of most value? Now, don't think that your values are going to be carried because of 20 years of learning when you were younger. No, you have to constantly be involved. That demonstrates your real value to it. If you're not engaged in it, if you're not thinking about her, so then you're no different than the guys that left the inn. That's the new point it's telling you here. That there's a misnomer, there's a misunderstanding that people have that if I put all that time in, now, I've got all that momentum and that stays with me my whole life. Not true. This is telling you it's only going to be with you and only readily accessible to you if you constantly have it on your mind, if your attitude of the person, meaning what they really value, is constantly there, and that's only if they're maintaining it, they're involved in it. But a person takes a break from learning, right? And it's not because he has to address his needs, but if he takes a break, like the two guys at the end, that demonstrates that his interest is lost. And if your interest is lost, it's not going to stay with you. The only time it stays with you and it waits for you is if it's constantly on your mind and you're coerced by the needs of the moment to take care of whatever your financial needs are, whatever it is in life, your health. But as long as it's still in your mind, it'll wait for you. That's when it stays with you, meaning the value you have it is not diminished because of being preoccupied at the office. That's not going to disintegrate your relationship to learning. That is only done by your own will. If you, nothing is really preoccupying your time, but you do not choose to go back to learning, oh, that demonstrates your value has now been compromised or lost, you know, God forbid. So you see, it's giving you insight into, you know, a deep concept over here, that the real value that the Torah is talking about here, what's really to be praised about the person, and what is really determining the level of the person, is not what he learned in the past. And that also is not going, there's no such thing as a momentum when you talk about studies. It has to do with the value that you have at the present moment. What is your value system right now? And evidently the Torah is telling you here that there's a danger. A person can slip up. He can be caught by something else that catches his ear or his eye, and it lures him away from study. Evidently then he didn't have the truest value. He didn't really study in to see the philosophy of Torah, to understand on the very, you know, on the complete, you know, spectrum of all the benefits of Torah, if a person can actually leave it. That shows you that his learning was really not the highest level, if he could leave it later on. Do you all see the idea? You see how it's, you see the new point now? And you see the different facets to it? So it really comes with a lot of ideas over here, not only the dynamics of a person and his relationship to wisdom, but that here, this Talmudic portion is telling you what the underlying praise of the person is. It's not just that he had all those years and he's got that in the bank. No, it's not. It doesn't work that way. And if you look at Ezekiel 18, you'll see that it says if a person was wicked and he sinned, but then he repents and he completely follows God. Because it talks about a person who follows God, but the person who's completely following God. So the person who, because the person can do somewhat the way he repents, but it says the person who completely follows God, all of his sins are forgotten, like they're never done. Why is that? This very idea that God looks at the person in terms of what his current value is. And a person will not get punished for all the greatest sins that he did. If he does real repentance and he has remorse and accepts upon himself never to do it again, so now there's no punishment for this person. Why? Because punishment from God is only to correct a person in terms of a flawed attitude or actions. But if a person did that himself, then there's no need for punishment. He's corrected himself. That's what it means. God forgets it all. It's like it's never done. And that's the truth. That's what Ezekiel says. But the inverse is also true. If a person was a great person, but then he eventually sins and he abandons it, or he, let's say he regrets the learning, the time he put into learning, or he regrets, and he has, I could have been making a lot of money. I could have been... he really values the money over his learning. or whatever it is, or he actually starts going off the path and doesn't keep the Torah anymore. So in that case, all the good is forgotten. Because, again, it goes by the attitude of the soul. What is the real value of this person at this moment? That's what God looks at. What's the reality? What is your reality right now? Doesn't matter what you did in the past. if you went to the opposite extreme. If you were great, now you're a wicked person, that doesn't matter. All the good in the past is meaningless. But if you were wicked and now you repented, so all the evil in the past is of no consequence. You're not punished, and God looks at it as if it was never done. That's what it says. It won't be recalled before God, all the evil that the person did. So this is a parallel in terms of that lesson, that what is God looks at in the person is, what is your current value system? What is your attitude? What do you value? Even King David said that he should be protected from sins. He recognized that the person can always slip up. And he didn't say he had any guarantee that he would never sin. So he prayed. He prayed for his thing, amongst many, many other things he prayed for. But look at the level of this person, King David. He prayed that he shouldn't succumb to any sin. Because he recognized that the person can be overtaken by emotion.
Even a great person.
Yep. That's what King Solomon says. He says, there's no man who's righteous on earth that does good and never sins. No such thing. So the Talmud says over there that it's on Sabbath. It says that Talmud Sabbath, that 55B, I believe, that the there is exception. There were four people who never sinned. It was Moses' father, Amram, Kilav, who was son of one of David's sons, Benjamin, the son of Joseph, the son of Jacob, and Yishai, the father of King David. So what does it mean then in the verse that there's no man on earth who does good never sins? So Tosfos comments over there, the commentary on the Gemara and the Talmud, and he says the verse is talking about the general rule. The general rule is that there's no man on earth that does good never sins. Yes, four people out of the billions and billions who ever existed, they didn't. So it is possible, but highly, highly unlikely. So the Torah is in general, is always teaching generalities. Yes, there can be exceptions, of course. Okay. All right, so it's a nice piece of Talmud, huh? Okay, so I think we'll wrap it up over here. I got to step out, but what we'll do is we'll continue then next Sunday with, we're up to chapter 11, right? That's what we're up to now in Kahelis?
Yep.
Okay, so we'll begin that, God willing, a week from today, same time. And again, if there's any questions, during the week as well, don't hesitate to be in contact, email, phone, whatever is good. And otherwise, we'll pick up next Sunday and we'll start over. And Cal, if you could be so kind, I'll post this and just let Doug know that we fleshed this out some more. So I'm sure he'll appreciate hearing the class. All right?
I'll do that.
Great.
Thanks, Rabbi.
Okay, my pleasure.
Thank
you.
All right, everybody, have a great week. Learn well. I look forward to learning again next week. All right, and by later on in the day, I'll put this class online under the audio section, so if you need to listen to it over again, it'll be there. Okay.
Thank you, Rob.
Okay, right.
Bye, everybody.